One of the Proverbs says, you know, raise a child up in the way of the Lord and then he'll follow him for the rest of his life. And so instilling those good habits. And to me, you know, it's not necessarily when or frequently we pray, but it's the quality and instilling good habits. One of my favorite books is called Atomic Habits, and it talks about how to build good habits. And I don't believe that that's written from a Christian standpoint. I don't know the author or his background, but you know, the principle still sounds. And the fact is that, you know, if we help form those good habits, then our children will retain those good habits. And if we reinforce those behaviors, so leading by example, you know, making sure the Bible does also tell us, hey, pray in silence, pray in secret. Don't be like the Pharisees. And my son needs to see that. He needs to see that dad prays. My daughter needs to see, even at a very young age, hey, dad prays. Dad's going to lead us in prayer. Dad's going to making sure that we spend time with Jesus, that we do Bible studies.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today, we're with Jeremy. He is the father of two, a 10-year-old boy, a 2-year-old girl. He's been married for 13 years, and 9 years ago, he made the difficult choice to focus more on his family by switching careers from TV production to working in trucking. He's an active member of his church, and he is growing as an intentional dad. Thanks for being here, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Let's jump right in. If you could tell us about your current family, and then if you could tell us one of the most impactful life events that shaped you as a father.
Sure. You know, my son is, as you mentioned, 10 years old. He was my first. We had a lot of trouble getting there. We had some miscarriages and in order to get there. So it's kind of hard sometimes to say that I'm just a father of two, because I feel like when I get to heaven that those other kids are going to be there. And then my 2-year-old, my daughter, my son, he's getting those preteen years, and he's really looking to me. And that kind of scares me just a little bit, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, when we start talking about that, it's ties right into the question of, hey, how do we, something that shaped me as a father. And that really is the fact that I didn't have a dad. And then when my mom married my stepfather, he was a very, very good example of what not to do. And so growing up and coming into fatherhood, that was all I had. And it was really, really hard for me. And it was difficult to not become bitter. It was difficult to not say, you know, all these other people had these great examples. I'm surrounded by them all the time. And in my Mason Lodge and in my church, all these people are like, oh, I'm going out with my dad. My dad taught me this. My dad taught me that. And never had that. And that was tough. But finally, somebody, a mentor of mine, and unfortunately he's passed on, but he pointed out, he said, you know, you have the best dad. You are the best father figure. And so I encourage you to look into the Bible and say, hey, you know, how was God a good father? How were the godly men in the Bible? There are so many examples of how they led their families, and some of them how they didn't. I'm recently in the book of Samuel in church, and whenever he said, hey, God said, hey, you know, you're not being a good dad, so I'm going to be a good dad for you, and you're not disciplining your children, I'm going to discipline them for you. And the same thing with Israel, and then Christ is the church, and there's so many examples in the Bible that we can pull from to be a great dad. So that was a really conversation based on me opening up to a man that I considered a mentor, really was a defining moment for me. And there's another one, and I'm, you know, this is swallowing a lot of pride and being very open and raw with it, but losing my temper, I lost my temper, had a big knockdown, drag out fight, and realized I'm becoming the man that I did not want to be. I'm acting like my stepfather, and that's completely and totally unacceptable. And so I had to take a big step back and say, be very, very introspective and say, what am I doing wrong? Why am I having these issues? Why am I thinking this way? Why am I doing? And so being able to admit when I'm wrong, being able to apologize and say I'm sorry, and then be able to make meaningful and impactful change, because you have to be intentional. And if you're not willing to change, then they're not going to be willing to change. Because as the head of the household, as the leader of the family, it's my responsibility to lead by example. And if I'm not willing to swallow my pride and make meaningful and impactful, lasting change and not fall back in those old habits and make sure that mistakes remain as minimal as possible. We're all human. We're going to mess up. I'm going to lose my temper again. But to make sure that I have my emotions in check where it never gets to the point where my family's afraid of me. And that whenever they know, hey, dad's mad, it's going to be okay. We just need to, you know, he's going to be okay. Just give him a minute. And not, oh, dad's mad, we need to leave, we need to run, we need to hide, we need to be afraid of him.
So did you ever know your biological dad?
I know who he is. I've never met him. I found out that a few years ago that I have a half brother, and we share the same father, but different mothers. And so I know of him through my half brother. He's a great dude. We've actually never met, but we communicate via text and social media frequently. But through him, he convinced me that, I was on the fence. because the person who doesn't want to be part of my life, never made any effort to find me, even though he knew where I was, is that somebody that I ever really want to be with? Do I want to meet them? And, you know, I was kind of starting to lean towards, yes, you know, giving into my curiosity in that. And thankfully, God put him in my life to say, no, you don't want that. And so I made the intentional decision to not pursue that based on the information that he told me.
Wow. So your stepdad came into the picture when you were young?
Yeah, I was about 5 years old. And my mom and him married and everything was good for a while. I mean, even to the point where he adopted me, I took his last name. And everything was okay for a while. And then, you know, things turned sideways and it started slow. And, you know, of course, being very young, I was at the time, like I said, at the time, 5 years old, and I was 12 whenever they separated and eventually divorced. And by that time I was a little bit older and able to recognize, but, you know, thankfully my mom got me in therapy and with a Christian counselor, who was able to help me see like, hey, these are some, in a way that a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old can understand. These are some things that happened that were inappropriate, that were harmful, because as a kid, I didn't know any better, didn't know any different. And so that was helpful, again, to circle, you know, bring the circle back around saying, hey, these are things that I absolutely will 100% not do if God ever gives me the opportunity to become a father.
So was he was an angry man also, stepfather?
Yeah. He very much was. He was a police officer, and he never sought any counseling or treatment for the things that he saw on the job, which I'm sure are terrible. Police officers have a very difficult job, and they see the worst of society, death and assaults and all those things on a regular basis. And to not have any outlet for that is tough, but then it's even worse to bring it home and take it out on the innocent people in your life who don't have to be through that because of their sacrifice. And so that, I think he had a lot of unresolved issues, and it's not something I ever approached with him. And really, we haven't spoken in years, and I hate to say it, but unless he's ever willing to make meaningful change, that's not something I would ever need or want to pursue.
So when you became a dad, you suddenly saw some of those things pop up in your own life from what you had seen in your own dad. And what was that process like? To, you know, you mentioned it briefly that you saw it happen and you looked in the mirror. What was that like for you?
Gosh, that's such a hard question. And the answer is simply it was terrifying and it was hard and it was probably one of the defining moments of my life to say this is unacceptable as a man, as a Christ following man, as a godly man who wants to leave a godly life and a God, not just a godly father, but just personally, it's not acceptable for me to have those types of behaviors. And it was hard not only to see that in myself, but also to have the conversation with myself, like, listen, man, you got to make some changes and you're wrong. I think that so often as men, our pride gets in our way. And so to be able to look at myself and say, you're wrong, bud, and you have to change that. And to be able to swallow that pride, I think for me at least, was the first step to being able to say, I can change, is to admit that I'm wrong. Mm.
Did you feel like the pride was telling you that you're justified in your actions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when it's like, oh, well, you know, she said this, or, you know, your kid did this. And so, you know, anger is a justifiable reaction. Maybe, you know, I think there's always room for your feelings. And I think that it's not necessarily wrong that we feel those things. It's what we do with them. I think that is more defining. And for me, sometimes I still feel extreme anger, but to be able to control that emotion, put it where it needs to be, and also recognize, hey, you need to take a second before you deal with the situation.
That's really fantastic that you feel like that God has changed you in that way to have grown self-control. I suppose that's what you would say.
Yeah, very much. Pouring into the fruits of the Spirit and really, again, diving into the Bible and saying, okay, I have a godly father who's a godly example. And, you know, one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control and figuring out, okay, these are the fruits of the Spirit that I feel like I mean, there's always room for growth, but I feel like these are the ones that are okay for now. And let's focus on these ones that need to grow more.
How would you define your role in the family?
There's so many facets to that, and there's so many ways to answer it. Obviously, I like to think I'm the leader and the head of the house, but at the end of the day, my wife and I are a true partnership. I don't make major life decisions without her. She doesn't make major life decisions without me. There have been times where I've made decisions and just said, hey, you know, this is the way we're going to go. And she followed me faithfully. But sometimes those didn't end so well. And I think that that's just something that, again, comes with time and also with swallowing that pride. And now, you know, I mean, I'm getting ready to get a new tattoo. And, you know, even in something like that, it's saying, you know, are you okay with this? Is this, you know, is this something that you feel like is okay? Because, you know, you're going to stare at it the rest of our lives. It's it doesn't go away. It's there forever. And so, you know, even in something like that, which so a lot of people would consider insignificant, you know, when we start talking about really any facet of our life, I think that that is, was a really key for me, even though my wife respects me as the leader of the household. I think part of that respect is built because I listen to her. I don't dominate the conversation. I don't try to force my way. I make sure that she feels heard and that she's part of the decision-making process.
Yeah, listening. The word leading, it can be misleading. And it's interesting because the Bible actually never uses the word leading. It uses the word head of the household, or actually just the head, like Christ is the head of the church. And so I love the passage in Ephesians where it says that husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, which that means giving up your life for her good, not dominating for your own good. And I think there's something very beautiful about that true definition of what love really is.
And with that, I always go back to the story of, you know, Christ tells us in order to become the greatest, you must become the least. And he led by serving, very much by serving, you know, I mean, even to the point of washing feet, which was not something that a king would ever do. You know, it was the feet, and that especially in that time were considered one of the dirtiest parts of the body, especially in that world where everything ended up on the ground. They didn't have, you know, really sewer systems or anything else. You're walking through the muck and the sewage and the dirt and everything every day. And so for Jesus to say, I'm going to wash your feet, that example always stuck with me so much, to be able to say, I'm not the leader, I'm the servant. Mm-hmm. But then over time, that earns me the right to lead.
To be the leader is to be the servant. I was just reading the other day, you know, that when Jesus says, or someone asks him, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And then he says something like, you must become like a child.
He calls the child over to him and says, this is it. These are the greatest.
Yeah, that you must humble yourself like a child. This is how you enter the kingdom of heaven. And there is something humbling about that, because most of us, at least, especially in the West, we don't want to degrade ourselves or lower ourselves below our position willingly. But yeah, that's the call, is for us to put ourselves in the right place underneath particularly God himself, but to see ourselves as we really are. So,
and if I can bring another story up, and I'm glad that you said that, because it really reminded me of it. It's a story that I haven't visited or shared in a very long time, but it was something that helped me to understand biblical truth a lot better through my son. And I remember whenever he was two, he was not a good sleeper really until he was about five. He would wake up several times through the night. It was, I mean, just Clash of the Titans trying to get him just to go to bed. And then to get him staying in bed was just a struggle. But, you know, patiently, every single time, he would cry out in the middle of the night, Dad. And I'd get up and go to him, get him to go back to sleep. And then I'd go back to sleep. Hour or two later, Dad, get up, go in there, comfort him. And I'm sitting there and I'm in the rocker and I'm rocking him back to sleep. And it's like, this has got to be how God sees us. We call to him, and it doesn't matter how many times we call. Doesn't matter what time of the day or night it is, he comes to us, and we know that he's going to be there for us, just like my son knows I'm going to be there for him, no matter how many times he cries out in the night, no matter, you know, and then whenever in the morning he's going to wake up and he's going to demand Bluey and breakfast, that, you know, and Dad's going to be there, Mom's going to be there, somebody's going to be there, one of us is going to be there to take care of him. And that's got to be one of the greatest joys for God, for his children, and for us as our father, to know that no matter how many times we call, no matter how much sleep we didn't get or how angry they made us the day before, it doesn't matter. We're still going to be there for them, just like God's going to be there for us. And it really helped me to understand the idea of having faith like a child, and the fact that God is our father in a very real and literal sense.
Beautiful. Let's jump into the three practical things that we talked about right before this. We've got, you do prayer time with your family, you do family fun night, and non-screen related activities. So let's talk about that. And then I want to hear about the transition you made from 9 years ago from TV production into trucking, and how that decision came about and how you made that choice and those kinds of things. So let's start with the three practical things here. Let's start with prayer time. What does that look like in your family?
Right. So prayer time, it varies a lot because of my job and the nature of my job. And we do what we can when we can. And so, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm very inadequate in that area. So, but now that I'm off the road, which we'll be talking about here shortly, that really has helped a lot. But it means going to church. It means praying before meals. It means praying before bedtime. And, you know, the verse, I want to say it's in one of the Proverbs, says, you know, raise a child up in the way of the Lord and he'll follow him for the rest of his life. And so instilling those good habits. And to me, you know, it's not necessarily when or frequently we pray, but it's the quality and instilling good habits. One of my favorite books is called Atomic Habits, and it talks about how to build good habits. And I don't believe that that's written from a Christian standpoint. I don't know the author or his background, but the principles still sound. And the fact is that, you know, if we help form those good habits, then our children will retain those good habits. And if we reinforce those behaviors, so leading by example, you know, making sure the Bible does also tell us, you know, hey, pray in silent, pray in secret. Don't be like the Pharisees, but also, you know, and my son needs to see that. He needs to see that dad prays. My daughter needs to see, even at a very young age, hey, dad prays. Dad's going to lead us in prayer. Dad's going to making sure that we spend time with Jesus, that we do Bible studies. And so whenever the opportunity presents itself, you know, say, this is a great time for prayer.
So what does that look like when the opportunity presents itself? How do you do that?
Well, some of them are super easy. You know, right before a meal, hey, let's pray. Right before bed, let's go tuck you into bed and pray. Obviously, those are some gimmies. Those are super easy.
Do you have any prayers that you repeat at those times, or do you say something different every time?
Meal times can be kind of repetitive, but I always encourage at bedtime. It's always a mutual prayer. But both of us always pray, and we take turns going first. But I always encourage my son, talk to Jesus as if you were talking to your friend. Tell him what you're thankful for. Tell him what you're afraid of. Tell him what what you're feeling. And if you're having trouble during the day, tell him that too. You know, whenever we were homeschooled for a few years, and this year we made the decision to transition back to public school, and he struggled with that a lot. He had a lot of anxiety around it. I said, buddy, this is an awesome time to talk about that prayer. You know, we always talk to Jesus like we're talking to a friend. Let's open up to him about that. Anytime you're feeling anxious, that should be your go-to tool. And because we had started on those habits, and like I said, some of those are give-me's, but also whenever you see the opportunity, like, okay, there's fear here, let's pray about that fear. Whenever there's anger here, hey, let's stop and let's pray about that. Let's figure out. And, you know, I've noticed not only does it help them, it helps me. It helps me to keep those habits. It helps me to be more intentional. And so it all around helps everybody.
So at mealtimes, you've got a repetitive prayer. Do you have it memorized? Could you say it right now?
I mean, it's not word for word repetitive, but it's always, you know, thank you for this food. Thank you for providing for us. Thank you for mom or dad, whoever cooked the meal. I pray that it would nourish our bodies. Amen. Something to that effect.
Like an acknowledgement of God's provision.
Right. Basically.
And a gratitude to God who's greater than us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes the situation calls for something different, but as a general rule, it's pretty much pretty standard.
What about, and I imagine the nighttime prayer is similar as far as it's a broad prayer for the day and so forth.
Sometimes, but again, with that one, I always encourage them to be open and honest. And so if the day was a generic bland day, we get that it reflects in our prayer time. But if there was something that happened, my son has learned over the years to be specific. So thank you for this that happened with my friend, or this that happened on my video game, you know. And obviously he's a kid, he's praying for small kid stuff, trying to be more intentional than just thank you for today, thank you for keeping us safe, let's go to bed. Because to me,
how did you encourage that specificity?
Asking questions. And sometimes during prayer, especially at the beginning when we were trying to first start out teaching him how to pray, it's not. And also I read a Bible study on the Lord's Prayer. And it's like, okay, there's a pretty specific word. You should pray like this. Is Jesus telling us we should say those specific words every day? Or when we start really thinking about what the Lord's Prayer says, is that like a category? So we thank God for being God. We thank God for his provision. And then, you know, when you start really breaking those down, it's like, okay, what's he actually saying here? As opposed to just reading the words. And when you start doing that deep dive into the Lord's Prayer, you know, and saying we should pray like this, like, okay, these are not necessarily specific words that need to be said. And so turning that into a conversation that I can have with at the time, 7-year-old was a little bit challenging in and of itself. But once we got there and got him to understanding that, it really helped a lot. And so it's like, hey, you know, how was your day today? What happened that made you happy? What happened that made you sad? It's like, well, let's talk to Jesus.
What's something that you want your kids to take from that as you do that practice of praying? What do you hope your children will remember?
I want them really especially to take away that you can talk to God about anything, and it doesn't matter what it is. If you sinned, you can talk to him about that. If you struggled, you can talk to him about that. If you were afraid, if you were depressed, if you were sad, if you were lonely, if you were happy, if you were elated, if you're joyful, bring everything to him. God wants to, I mean, obviously he knows, but he loves it when we talk to him. And I think that's reflected over and over again in the Bible. He loves when we talk to him, so much so that he sent us a Holy Spirit to commune with us at all times, and that we can always talk to him and leave that bridge there that's open.
Let's go to number two, family night, fun time. What does that look like?
Family night and fun time, I think, is going to tie into one of the future questions, so I'm going to kind of leave it a little bit open-ended, but we have specific nights here in our household, and it was something that my wife and I have kind of intentionally done to make sure that everybody gets something.
Like a calendared rhythm?
Sort of, yeah, and it does come to a calendar almost always. It can change, obviously, based on needs and what's going on. But as a general rule, yeah, pretty well stays the same. Typically, Tuesday night is Dad's night, and that relieves me of all responsibility. I don't have to worry about childcare. I don't have to do anything else. Thursday night is Mom nights, and same thing applies there. Typically, either Wednesday or Friday is family night, and that can change based on Mom and I's date nights. We make sure we go on two dates a month, and so family game night is chosen based on around when those dates are. So to say that it's a calendar event, we kind of work it in.
Yeah. So okay. So another night of the week, you get an opportunity to go out, maybe, and do you hang out with friends, or do you just go do a hobby, or you do whatever you feel like doing on that night?
Right.
Do you ever just stay at home?
Well, yeah, most of the time, actually. I mentioned in the beginning, I'm a third degree master mason, so part of the reason why I chose Tuesday night is because twice a month, that's our lodge night. So I can go hang out with the guys. I mean, you know, the Masons are strictly a men's fraternity. And so, you know, going and hanging out with those guys who are like-minded, and, you know, most of them, a lot of us go to the same churches and things like that. And then on the nights that I don't have lodge, I typically put my headphones on and play video games until it's time to go to bed, or I read a book, or, you know, I may choose to spend that time out in the garage working on a project or whatever I've got going on. But I make sure that I invest in me.
Okay. So then the other night, so one night a week is yours. The other night is your wife's. One night of the week is family night. And then another night of the week, depending on the week, is date night. So just you and your wife together. That's really fantastic. So you get basically all the relationships in different categories, including the one just yourself.
Yes.
Let's talk about date night, and then let's talk about family night.
Sure. So family night, it varies. Right now, obviously, in the heat of summer, a lot of times that ends up being a family evening. Mm-hmm. And we go to the pool a lot. So we bought a membership to our local pool, which here in Oklahoma City, it's pretty big, and it's got a lot of options there for kids to do fun stuff. And it's got a really good baby area for my daughter. And, you know, my son, he's learned how to swim last summer really well. So he loves to go over there and just play and just be a kid. And it's great for me. He and I spend time together over there. And he's like, hey, Dad, can you do this? And right now, that's a lot what it is. Obviously, that changes in the winter. That usually turns into board games, or we have the PlayStation VR. We played, you know, Just Dance as a family, or there's just so many things that can look like. And it changes with the seasons and with when opportunities present itself to do other things.
So give me one of your favorite memories from family fun time.
Oh gosh, there's so many good ones to choose from. Recently, we were one of my really good friends was in town, and he's a truck driver, and he doesn't make it through all that often, but he came over and he participated in family fun night, and it brought a different dynamic where it's not just the same people playing the same games. And we just played Jenga, and we just laughed, and, you know, the thing fell over, and we laughed and made fun of each other, and I mean, joking, play in a playful way, obviously. But, you know, and teasing each other and giving a hard time, like, oh, don't let it fall. You know, it was just a lot of fun just to be able to, you know, it also reminds my wife and I, hey, be kids, have fun. Don't just because you're almost 40 doesn't mean that you have to act like you're almost 40 all the time. You know, I have enough opportunity to be the professional guy at work for 45 hours a week. When I'm at home, it's okay to be a kid sometimes.
You know, it's funny, my wife, we talked recently, and this was in the last month, she said something, you know, sometimes I just want to have fun together, you know, because sometimes you get into serious mode all the time. Every conversation becomes very, very serious. And we often forget just to enjoy each other, delight in the relationship.
Yeah. And another one recently, my son, he's really into Roblox. I mean, he loves those online gamings. And we, you know, of course, we do that safely as we can, parental mode, and we review all the interactions and et cetera. So that does take a little bit of extra work, but there are some games on there that both he and my wife and I, his mom and I and him like to play together. There's one, it's a gardening game, and you collect seeds and you grow your garden, and then you can exchange the fruits that grow. And it's a relaxing game, but we all like it. It's a lot of fun just to turn on the screens and be in this same digital environment together. And I think that's one thing too. And I know that this is going to tie into a question you're going to bring up here in a little bit, I think, but it's engaging with them in a way that my kids like. not just in a way that I like.
Is this the non-screen related activities?
This one is, that one particularly is a screen related activity, but it's the same way in that he loves playing Nerf guns. And so, you know, I spent a while on the Facebook Marketplace collecting those. And I got on Amazon and it was like $13 for 1,000 rounds. So going out in the backyard and doing that is a lot of fun. And, you know, again, the swimming pool is something that everybody loves. And we have memberships to the science museum and to the zoo. And so sometimes the family game night is moved to a Saturday and we go to the science museum or we go to the zoo or we go to the museum. There's several museums in our city and whatever that looks like.
The non-screen related activities, is that an intentional part of trying to get away from screens for a while? Tell me a little bit about what your thought process was in doing that.
So I think it's important to find balance there. And, you know, the first thought is like, I want my kid to have a lot of the same experiences I did. You know, my parents are very much go outside. I don't want to stay until the street light comes on, but you better not be out after the street lights either. So, you know, very much in the 80-90 parent style. And so I want him to have, I don't want him to spend his entire life staring at a screen. On the flip side of that, screens are going to be a very important part of their lives, just like they're an important part of our lives. You know, I don't think that anybody could have foreseen what computers, I'm talking to you on a computer. They call it a cell phone, but this is essentially a computer in my hand. Mm-hmm. Whenever we first went to the moon, the lunar lander had like 8 megabytes of storage or something ridiculous. It wasn't very much, but now, you know, this phone has half of a terabyte. And so, you know, the technology is only going to continue. And so I want him to be able to have the skills to succeed in a digital world that's going to be increasingly digital. But also I want him to be able to survive in a non-digital world, because that's very much probably is always going to be a thing. I don't think that there's ever going to be a time where everything's going to exist 100% online, or at least not in our lifetimes. And so, you know, I also know with those non-screen related activities, some of those are game related, some of those are real life related. You know, teaching him to mow the lawn, having him help me build a plant stand for mom, helping him learn to change the oil, playing Nerf guns. It can look like a whole lot of different things, but making sure that, and that one isn't always necessarily on a schedule. That one is very much as the opportunity presents itself.
Is changing the oil is not part of family fun night?
No, that's definitely, I don't think anybody enjoys that. And if you're a mechanic and that's your thing, great. Proud of you. Power to you. That is not my thing.
So on family fun time, family night, what is it that you want your children to remember from that? What do you want to teach them through that activity?
I want them to have memories of the family like my wife has with her family. She's the oldest of five. I have one brother other than the one I found recently. I have another brother and he's 9 years younger than me. My mom, especially after my mom and stepdad divorced, there wasn't much family there. She was a single mom. She worked long hours. She was typically gone shortly after I woke up and I had to go to school. Fortunately, my grandparents lived close, so they were able to help with that. And then she wouldn't get home until 5, sometimes 6 o'clock. You know, we're going to bed at 9. And you know, I do have some fond memories of my mom. Don't get me wrong. She made time for us when she could. But being a single mom, those opportunities were few and far between. And so I want my kids to be able to look back and say, Dad and Mom cared about me. They wanted to do things with me and to build memories in a way that I never had an opportunity to.
Then the non-screen related activities, you mentioned a little bit on that as far as living in the real world, learning to work and interact in the real world versus just online. Would you say that you want your children to be able to do both of those effectively, or do you feel like one is more valuable than the other?
I would love for them to be able to live in both worlds effectively. You know, I want my son to know how to write a check. I want him to know how to pay his taxes. Now, those are all things that I pretty much had to teach myself. I want him to know how to use a rotary telephone. Hmm. We did a fun experiment the other day and said, if we asked one of our friends, said, hey, hold a fake phone up to your hand, they would do this. Uh-huh. And I asked my 10-year-old how to do that. He put his entire hand up like this. You know, just the different technology. I was watching a video not too long ago of these high school seniors that didn't know how to use an automatic can opener. So sometimes real non-screen related activities is playing Jenga or, you know, a game like that. And sometimes it's learning to make scrambled eggs.
Let's jump into your expertise, your experience. So when we started, you mentioned that 9 years ago or a little over 9 years ago, you made a choice to focus on your family versus your career. And you switched from being in TV production to being a trucker. Mm-hmm. Tell me how that came about. How did you make that decision? What were the influences that got you there?
Right. So it's kind of a long story, and I'll try to be as concise as I can with it, so this doesn't get drawn out. But I went to college, and my degree is in TV radio broadcasting with an emphasis in news and information gathering. So I always wanted to work in the news industry. I never really wanted to be on camera. I have a voice for radio, and unfortunately, I also have a face for radio, which is fine. I wanted to be on the radio. I thought that was going to be cool. But right about the time I was graduating, the iHeartRadio movement took on, which essentially means that most radio moved into a digital realm where there's really DJs are very few and far between. You know, the idea that there's a DJ radio host in every single town with their local TV or radio station is gone. Most of them are hubbed. I listen to KLEV Radio. You know, they're based out in Nashville, I think, and they're broadcast all over the nation. Whenever I'm not listening to them, I do listen to country music a lot. Again, they're based in Nashville, and that's broadcast out. There's no more. I think there's one local radio station left, or two or three local radio stations left here in Oklahoma City. One's contemporary rock, one's classic rock, and one's country. And everything else is hubbed out of major cities. So that dream kind of fell through. That's okay. It is what it is. And so my second dream was to be a TV producer. And so getting my degree in that, and then getting into the industry, everybody told me you have to pay your dues. And so I did my best to pay my dues. I worked for TV stations here in Oklahoma City. We moved to Texas for a little bit. I took a producer job down there. First of all, I'll say it wears on you. No, people don't often think that news people have the same types of mental health issues that, say, a police officer does. And we may not be on the front lines, but we get all the raw intelligence data. We read the reports exactly as it happened. We see the video exactly as it happened. And then we have to cut that down, and that wears on you. I'm just seeing the absolute worst of society in your face all day. And I bring that up not to say, woe is me, but to say that was a part of my decision-making process because I didn't like how it affected me. And even moving back into the engineering side, I'll give you an example here in Oklahoma City. Back in 2013, we had a massive tornado come through, hit a school, and killed kids. Sorry. It still bothers me to this day, having to watch them pull those tiny bodies out of that school. That's something I'll never be able to unsee, and I'll never be able to forget. And it bothers me so much. But, you know, so that even in not being able to get away from it, being on the engineering side of it and being, you know, running servers and doing data entry and stuff like that, you still can't get away from it. So that was part of it. But also, you know, it was financial. With a 4-year college degree and more than 5 years in the industry, I was still making less than a 7-Eleven clerk. And I was like, you know, I absolutely cannot raise a family on this. So, you know, it was okay. I can go back to school. And it's going to take 2 to 4 years to be able to reinvent myself and do something different, or I can go do something in trade. At the time, I was pretty unhealthy, you know, so things like welding, plumbing were going to be a lot harder to get into. But somebody, you know, I had a couple of men in my church that were truck drivers, like, oh, you should really look into that. And I did. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. It actually looks like a lot of fun. Went for the interview at the trucking school. They loved it. They said, oh, yeah, you should, you know, you're local, you have a family, you shouldn't have any trouble getting a local job. And, you know, they essentially straight lied in my face. And so I got my CDL, went to look for a local job, and it only took me 3 weeks to get my CDL, which is one of the things that I loved about it. It was quick. And at the risk of sounding cocky, I took to it pretty quickly. I mastered the skills at the school pretty quickly, but also found out very quickly upon graduation that every single local company wants at least 1 year over-the-road experience. And so that was really hard because, you know, I was like, okay, I can either go back into TV where I know we're going to struggle. My wife's been a stay-at-home mom almost our entire marriage with a couple of months exceptions, and she wanted to continue doing that, and we didn't really want to have her to go to work to then just pay somebody else to raise our kid. So the goal was always to continue to keep her home with our kids as much as possible, which at the time we only had the one. So I was like, okay, listen, son's 1 year old. I need 1 year over the road experience. Let's just bite the bullet and do it. And so it ended up, now I can look back and say that was an incredible blessing. At the time, it was one of the hardest things I had to do was my wife dropped me off at 4 a.m. and I got on a truck with some stranger. And I took off across the country to learn to be a truck driver because the school gets you your CDL, but you go out with a trainer to learn how to be a driver. Because let's be honest, anything you learn in a school, as soon as you step into the real world, pretty well goes right out the window, unless you're a doctor or a nurse or something like that. Right? And so being away from my family 3 to 4 weeks at a time and then only being home for 3 to 4 days. So I'm home 3 to 4 days every month and, you know, calling my wife from a different city every day saying, hey, you know, this is where I am. On the one hand, it was so, so hard, especially because my son, actually, my wife and I, our relationship kind of bloomed through that. Because when you're sitting there, you buy a headset, you put it on, I can talk for hours. You know, most of the time as a truck driver spent on the interstate. And so being able to talk for hours, but my relationship with my son is what I was missing out on. And that was really, really hard. I missed a lot of firsts. And that was really, really tough. But a little bit more than a year into that, I was able to switch to what they call a regional board. And so I only drove Oklahoma and the states that touched Oklahoma, which put me through Oklahoma City pretty frequently. So sometimes I could get through the house every day or two. Even if it was just to stop and have dinner or lunch with them, I'd be able to see them several times throughout the week. And then I found a company that would get me home every single weekend, went to work for them. And I was only gone for like a month. And the company that I'm with now called back and said, hey, we had an office position open up. Teaching, we think you'd be really good at. We want you to put in an application. So I put in the application, and a week later, they hired me, and a week after that, I started. I did that for 4 years, and then we had some problems with some senior management. Don't want to go into a whole lot of detail there, but the guy absolutely did not like me. I'm not the type of person that's easily pushed around, whether for the good or for the bad. So he and I did not clash because he very much liked to be in control. And so I ended up going back out on the road, and then that person left the company, and the person who took my job ended up leaving the company as well, and the opportunity came open for me to come back in. So on the one hand, my primary driver was money, and the secondary was I've got to get away from this industry. I don't like what it's making me become as a person. It's making me become cynical. It's making me become I'm having to disassociate just to be able to go home. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I sat in the driveway, just cried like a little baby before I went back in. I was like, I can't keep doing this. And I can't keep bringing this home to my family. I can't keep letting the terrible things that I see, the bitterness, the anger that I feel towards society as a whole. And I don't want to feel like that towards society as a whole. But when you're only presented with negatives, it's so easy to fall into the trap of the world is negative. Society is negative. Everybody sucks. Everybody hates everybody. And that's simply not true, but it's so easy to gain that perception. And then you don't really realize sometimes how much that affects you as a person.
How long did that take you to see that? Because, you know, I know that's not like a switch. You just turn off. What was that like when you came home and you didn't have that in your face anymore, those negative experiences that you're sort of vicariously living because you see them, right? How long did that take for you to see that effect and sort of turn around?
For me, I think it was probably accelerated because, you know, again, being on a truck away from everybody allowed me a lot of time to think and process. Mm-hmm. So it still took a little bit longer than I would have cared for. But, you know, when you do it for years, it took a couple of months before I felt like a normal human again. And like, I wasn't afraid of everybody and like, I didn't hate everybody anymore. Mm-hmm. I would say probably 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. Was that the transition away? I mean, that had to be that's a big choice to make when you've got a family.
Yeah.
To it was scary, you said?
Yeah, it very much was. When I had to quit my job to go to CDL school, and we had enough money in the bank to cover 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks if we stretched it. And I remember having a conversation with my wife. She's like, listen, I don't know how we're going to pay this light bill that just came in today. And God provided in a big way. I had just gotten I had no idea what to expect to make. I knew that most truck drivers, their families were able to stay at home. And I had gone through my training. I'd gone through my school with very, very little income. And God blessed me with a great trainer. And whenever he found out that I was essentially eating one sandwich a day, and that's all I had the money for, because every single penny was going home to keep the lights on while I went through training, which was only $300 a week, which even in 2010 wasn't a whole lot. So with that being said, no, it wasn't 2010, excuse me, 2016. Anywho, he made sure that I got one hot meal a day. And, you know, I told my wife, said, okay, so I'm going to have to come back home. I'm going to have to get two jobs. We're going to get caught up. We'll get through this. You may have to work for a little while, but I'll promise you I'll figure this out. And then my very first real check came through. And that one check was more than what I would have made in 2 weeks at my last job. And ever since then, God has provided for us financially by taking that leap of faith and listening to the people. God has always been really, really distinctive, I guess is the right word, in the way that he talks to me. And it took me a long time to figure that out. He talks to me a lot through people. A lot of people say, oh, God talks to me through circumstances or through this, that, the other thing. God tends to nudge me using people. And in this case, it was my wife and a couple of men from the church. And I was faithful in taking that step whenever he opened the door for me. And he's been faithful to me in my job ever since.
And, you know, he provided for you both financially, but also relationally, I would imagine, in your, you know, that relationship that you would have maybe missed out on with your son and even your wife, if you keep going down that path of, you know, the stress that you bring home from mm-hmm. watching lots of bad things happen nonstop.
It was also really hard to let go because, you know, my grandparents, I was blessed enough that my grandparents almost completely paid for my college education. I had some scholarships, but it was hard for me to move away because I felt like I was letting them down. And my grandfather at that time had already passed away, and my grandmother was very, very close to the end. I mean, I really had a hard time giving that up because I was like, man, I really don't want them to be disappointed in me or feel like I let them down or like that was a waste of money. And because that happened, you know, meaning to say, okay, enough is enough. And I think that's whenever we started into this, I think that was really the point that I wanted to get to, was learning to say enough is enough, not just for me, but don't let something like fear or shame or guilt hold you back. Because for me, it was a guilt of saying, you know, I failed. I didn't fail. I was successful in my field for many years. I didn't fail in letting down my grandparents because I think that at the end of the day, A, they would want me to be happy, and B, they would want me to do everything that I possibly could to take care of my family. And as long as I'm doing that, I don't think that they would be disappointed in me at all. But it took me a long time to come to that realization.
It's incredible, though, that the circle of being in TV or radio film and then trucking, and then they saw in you that you would be good at standing up in front of a bunch of people and teaching them. It's like the skills that you gained from being in TV or radio film, you know, in the production industry, I imagine have served you well in your role now, and not being afraid to talk in front of people, answer questions, and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, and not just that, but being able to think on the fly, you know, as a producer or an engineer, something can happen and you've got seconds to react, especially if it's live on the air. Also, something I learned in college as a news and information gathering is how to research. And that was tremendous in my current role.
That's really neat. Isn't it amazing how God does that?
Right.
A big
circle. He was preparing me when I didn't even know.
Yeah, that's right. You thought you were just going into trucking, and here you are.
Right. But essentially, I've been running an entire, you know, I've got 50 trainers that work for me, and I'm essentially the hiring manager. That's not my title, but that's essentially what I am. You know, I handle all the onboarding and teaching, and from the time they walk through the door, I handle everything from the government forms that they need to do to company policy and teaching them what they need to know about the company to getting them out into their own truck.
Are you gonna use those skills to create a video training course for all your onboarding?
We already have, actually.
Did you do it?
I did some of it.
You're passionate about a few things. I saw you mentioned that you're really into knives. You've got some hobbies. Have you managed to bring your kids into some of those hobbies yet?
Some of them, yes. Knives is definitely one of mine. I don't know if you guys got a glimpse, whatever. I come around there. If you don't mind, I'll show. My wife has decorated our room, but she let me have my one little corner, and I've got some knives over here. And actually, in that case right there are some of my grandfather's knives and also some knives that I've made over time. And most of them I just collected because I thought they were cool. And my son shares that passion, but it's something that my wife quite obviously has some reservations about safety-wise. So he has a couple of knives, but they're obviously intentionally dulled. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of toy knives, and we do talk about it. And we look at it, and we go to there's a knife store in Oklahoma City that we go to and frequent just to look around. And the other thing that I'm very passionate about is books. I'm self-declared bibliophile. I've got so many, I've got collections and authors, and I love to read. And whenever I was driving, it was one of my passions. If I wasn't on the phone, I was listening to an audiobook. My lunch break, but if I don't have anything else to do, I'm reading a book. Whenever I come home, if I need to relax, I'm reading a book. I love books. I love reading. I'm very picky about what I read, but those are probably the two things that, and I've really gotten kind of, this is recently, I've kind of gotten back. I used to be really big into video games. I've kind of gotten back into that as a way to, disassociate, I guess, for lack of a better term, because I people all day. I like to use that as a verb.
You need some non-people time.
I need some non-people time. And don't get me wrong, I love my family, but when you've done people all day and then I come home and do the people, sometimes I need some non-peoples.
Yeah. No, I know people in our culture, we like to put people into strict categories of extrovert and introvert, but I think most of us, we're somewhere in the scale of between both. And some of us have a larger degree of extrovert and some of us have a smaller degree. But at some point, almost everybody I talk to needs alone time.
Yes.
And so even those people who call themselves extroverts sometimes are actually introverts in disguise. And those who are
my wife told me many times, she said, you know, you are truly unique in that fact, because I have no problem getting in a truck and the only person that I see is the shipper, the receiver, and the truck stop employees for weeks at a time. That does not bother me. If it wasn't for my wife and my kids, I could be a trucker in my truck alone But then I also have no problem walking into a room of 35 new people and coming out with 40 new friends. And my wife, she's like, how did you even do that? There weren't even that many people there. How did you make extra friends?
That's funny. That's really fantastic. Well, any final things that you would say to all dads, anybody who's listening, that they should do, that they should focus on?
Yeah, make time for yourself. And I think that was where I was going with the earlier making time, making sure that we have a night for myself. And that really works for us in a lot of different capacities, but most especially for me. You know, you said that everybody has at least a little bit of an introvert, and even the greatest extroverts have a little bit of introvert. Mm-hmm. You can't pour from an empty cup. So make time for yourself, invest in yourself, because if you don't, at some point you're going to run dry and you're going to burn out.
That's good. Jeremy, thanks so much for all your time tonight. I really appreciate it.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.